I'm happy to say the second last video that we published has crossed over 10,000 views, which I was really stoked about.
YouTube's getting pretty smart and they can kind of tell if people are enjoying your video or not just for how long they watch it.
One of the things that I've learned, and this is really counterintuitive, is not to promote the channel and to try and get as many people to watch it as possible. And that is very different to the way that I was brought up in online marketing.
The idea is you don't want to be promoting your video or telling everyone to watch it if they're not really interested in watching that kind of content.
This is James Schramko.
James Schramko here. Welcome back to my podcast. This is episode 1070. Today, we're going to be delving more into my own journey back into YouTube with a new channel that I've been building out. Well, a new old channel, I should say. I've been getting help from my friend Zach Mason. So welcome, Zach, to the call.
Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, you've been really opening my eyes to the way that YouTube's done. You've helped me twice in the last few years, right? Firstly, with the health and fitness, because that's been your core thing, the personal training and nutrition, et cetera, metabolism, all that good stuff. At the time of recording this, we're coming up to within a month of the annual anniversary of your first intervention of me. And so I'm very grateful for that. I'm starting to experience the sort of long-term results that you bring to the table. But as I got to know you, I realized that you have a knack for YouTube videos. And together, we sort of got you helping some of my own clients based on the results you were getting for me and a couple of them. You've set up vidsurface.com. You went and purchased every course and mentorship available in this space because you wanted to do it right. And I think it's probably important to overcome this objection up front. You don't have a massive channel yet, but through the work you've been doing in the more recent stuff that you have been publishing on your own channel and through my channel, we've been able to see what your goods are. We've been able to see what results we've been getting. And I'm happy to say the second last video that we published has crossed over 10,000 views, which I was really stoked about. The one before that is up to about 9,500 views. The newest one we published just a few days ago is already up to 2,500 views. And the one before that, I think the one before that was the one where I didn't follow the instructions properly and didn't get a lot of views. And then the one before that was the first one we did properly, and it's up to about 9,000 views as well. Now, to put this in context, the channel that I'm talking about is, it had only 70 subscribers when we started and when we talked about this last time. You've been on here once talking about video. Now we're just about close to 500 subscribers. One of the things that I've learned, and this is really counterintuitive, is not to promote the channel and to try and get as many people to watch it as possible. And that is very different to the way that I was brought up in online marketing. We all talk about marketing and promotion and get views up. Like when my family or friends ask me about the channel or my customers ask me about the channel, because it's in the surfing niche, I actually say to them, I don't want you to go and subscribe or watch the video if you're not into surfing. And there's a really strong reason for that. Zach, do you want to explain why that might be the case?
Yeah, so YouTube's getting pretty smart and they can kind of tell if people are enjoying your video or not just for how long they watch it, whether they like it, dislike it, comment, read the comments, click on things, or are you tuning out of the app or doing something else, right? Now, we don't know the exact behind the scenes, but the reality is if you're making a video about surfing and you want someone who has no clue about surfing, no interest, never cared to watch it, they're not going to watch the whole video. That's going to reduce your average watch time. And then that to YouTube that says, oh, this video may not be that great because there's less people watching it. So the idea is you don't want to be promoting your video or telling everyone to watch it if they're not really interested in watching that kind of content.
I love it. I picked up a few tips from a friend of ours, Justin Brown, and he's got Primal Video. And he was saying, James, you're onto something. Just work with the topic that people are interested, but also blend it with things you want to talk about. And there's this fine balance, isn't there? I'd say in the past, I've probably only published things that I wanted to talk about. And now with you, you're kind of restricting me. It's exactly what you did with the fitness thing. You've changed my belief system around some things. And one of them is before we go starting making all the videos we want to talk about, we have to pay attention to what people are resonating with and keep pulling that thread. Can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah, well, I think a good example Like if I just talk about your videos, for example, sure. Right? So we figured out that talking about a particular type of product already channeled existing interest and demand because there wasn't much of a supply of it. And the supply that was available for this particular product or range of products was quite low compared to the demand. So we made a video about a particular brand of product and did well. Now we could have just been like, oh, that's cool. Let's go now talk about a completely different product that does a completely different thing to a completely different audience. And it's like going to see one concert and then halfway through the band changes to a different band. And you're like, well, I was here to see Metallica and now it's Elton John. Where did Metallica go? You know, it doesn't really make sense. So we thought, well, let's not do that. And instead, let's stick to this core product type, but just one variation of that product. So we're still capturing the existing attention for this particular product, but just in a different style. It's like if someone's into Rolexes and then you start talking about Casio, that ain't going to flow too well. But if you say, here's the newest Rolex and your next video is newest Rolex versus this Patek or Audemars or whatever, I'm not really into watches as you can see, but let's say the chances are the person who's interested in Rolex is going to watch the next video. But if you talk about Rolex and you're talking about Casios, completely different audience, completely different attention. And why this is a problem is because you're missing out on the binge effect, or like to call it the Netflix effect. I just started watching Fallout the other day, and it's really hard for me to not want to keep binging every episode afterwards because they've got a core theme, they're set up particular stories, and they've captured my interest, right? And we want to do the same thing with our YouTube videos. We're going to make a video about one topic, and the idea is, well, if we make another video, how can we bring those same people back and tap into the existing attention and demand that is in that topic? And that's how we've been able to repeat the success. And ultimately, you are becoming a key player in this kind of sub niche within the surfing niche, because you keep talking about things, talking about this product or types of products in this range that people are interested in. Now they're building more trust with you. They're asking you more questions. They're even giving positive feedback, negative feedback. And this is leading to more opportunity. But I won't keep blabbing on this, but I think that answers the question.
Thanks for answering that. And I do want to touch on a few of the things you mentioned, because this episode is essentially sort of the journey that's unfolding for me. And I know there's experts out there, right, who have got millions of followers and millions of views. And for one part, when I buy those courses or whatever, I feel sometimes they're a little bit cut and pasty and they're not necessarily taking into account my situation. But I feel like there'll be people who would be catching up with this episode who have a small or no presence on YouTube and would be interested to know what I've learned in the last few months that is repeatably successful. So the first thing is, if you hit on a topic that you're happy to talk about, as it turns out, this sub niche that I'm starting to get traction with is something that I actually really enjoy. Automatically, I enjoyed this sub niche and I talk about it with all my friends, and I didn't realize until I started going on surf trips that not everybody knows about this. In fact, very few surfers know much about it at all. And so it's kind of like a goldmine for me, because I know about it. I've got financial resource to gather the intel and the R&D that's needed to be able to talk about it confidently. And it's really turning on a lot of the surfers in terms of how they can tune their equipment. And we can see that coming out in the comments. As you said, we're getting largely positive comments. It's 90-something percent positive comments or thumbs ups. I do get a couple of comments that could be perceived as negative, and you help me even reframe those. You say, well, that's great. They're feeding the algorithm. They're helping the video get more eyeballs. They're creating traction. Can you talk about that? Because as a creator, basically, if you're going to create anything, you're going to get a hater. You're going to get a troll. You're going to get someone say something that is designed to try and upset you. In my case, there's only one or two themes that come. One is that I don't know how to pronounce something properly, which is funny because it's just not a natural word for me to say. And the second thing is that they want to see more ability from me in my surfing and stuff. And just also for context, it's an almost unreasonable demand, because the kind of videos I'm making, I actually I've got to purchase equipment or get equipment supply. And I'm now starting to get deals on supply and even free supply. That is one big change, because I'm now perceived as someone who's an authority in this, and to the point where the manufacturers are commenting on my video, which blew me away. So I've got to purchase this stuff. I then have to rigorously test it, which means, you know, logistically, I've got to go out and surf these things. And then I have to capture it on film. So I either have to carry around a camera in my mouth, or I have to pay someone to stand on land and point a camera at me. And compounded by the fact that I'm really just not that good at surfing yet, right? I've only been surfing for 10 years. And I started in my early 40s. Like, I've just started too late to be like some Kelly Slater style pro athlete. So there's a lot of factors that make it more difficult and challenging. But I am the one publishing the content, and it's like they don't really care about that. When they come along and they spray their little comment, talk about that for a creator, because it's going to happen to them, and how should they deal with that?
Look, it's going to be tough. Just prepare for that. When you have a video that takes off, or you might not even. The first time I shut down my channel was because I had one bad negative comment and I thought, oh, I suck. But not to dwell on the past, my point is, when you do have content that takes off, there's going to be people who feel like you made the video specifically for them and you did it wrong and you should have done it their way. However, as much as it hurts, try to take a step back and see it as, well, someone, I caught their attention, that's a positive, and I kept them engaged enough to realize they don't like it. So if the video was really bad, they would have clicked off. So you've done something good to get a hater, because they've actually paid attention enough to tell you why they don't like it. Second to that, it's engagement. And then what you'll find over time is that other people will disagree with these haters, and it starts to give you more ideas, more feedback and perspective on what topics might actually work well for future videos. And ultimately, you'll just stop caring. Like, I remember when we saw some haters popping up, and then I sent you a screenshot of one of my videos with like 590 comments, and more than half of them are people dissing the video, the content, saying I'm wrong. When I saw that many comments, I'm like, my brain can't possibly compute hundreds of negative comments. Therefore, I'm not even going to try. And if these people could do better, they're more than welcome to go and make their own version of the video and send it to me, and I'll give them my feedback on it. So it's going to hurt. And then, you know, first time sucks, second time's less. And then eventually you grow thick skin, you stop caring. And then you start to see it as a positive, because good comment, yay, validated my idea. I have a fan, maybe a new sub. Bad comment, yay, here's an idea. Here's something I can talk about. I'm understanding my market, what makes them triggered, what makes them click. And now, from a marketing perspective, we're actually planting little seeds in your videos to get these kind of responses. I mean, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you not want to prod the fire if you know that's what's going to reward the viewership and the algorithm and all that? Like, if your video has no engagement, one bad comment is better than no comments. That's the way I perceive it.
Yeah. In fact, the most recent successful video kind of came from the seed of me being brave enough to share with my audience something I didn't like.
Mm.
And it's one of the great joys of being an independent reviewer and not sponsored or sold out to a company, is that I actually said that there was this equipment that I got that I didn't like, and I sold it.
Yeah.
And then I had a few other people saying, oh, I didn't like mine either. And other people are like, well, I love mine. And so that created the seed of the next video, which we made.
Yep.
And it was like, the hypothesis was, well, maybe people who didn't like it had the old version, maybe who like it had the new version. Let's find out. And so we talked through that. In some cases, like, to overcome my handicap of not being an amazing surfer, we've been able to incorporate a little bit of footage from actual surfers. Let's just talk about if we're allowed to do that or not, because I had the same question this morning, actually. Someone wants to do an F1 channel, and they said they're having a lot of trouble because they can't use any of the footage. And I said, well, you might be able to use a little bit of the footage for fair use purposes, but I'm not a lawyer and I don't know the rules and regulations around it. But I do know, for one thing, we usually change the audio on it as a starting point. But what other things should we know about using B-roll footage that's not ours?
Yeah, I guess there is a little bit of gray area on this. However, there are like people with law degrees and backgrounds who specialize in this stuff, and it's always worth doing your own research to, you know, find what you're comfortable with. But I think as long as you're like appropriately using the content and not like straight out copying it or trying to benefit off someone else's content, it's kind of widely accepted. And even some of the top YouTubers in the world will repurpose other people's content. And, you know, like Greg Doucette, he's a fitness guy, but he's constantly showing footage of other people's videos and then he's commenting on it. So there is kind of this gray area.
Oh, yeah. Joey Swole.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it really just depends. But if you're like straight out copying someone's content and not kind of repurposing it appropriately, then yeah, maybe that's crossing the line. But I think find what you're comfortable with, and then you can see how far, you know, you can push the boundary with it. But using B-roll seems to be fine in most cases, especially if it's like a quick clip. But if it's 30 minutes of somebody else's video, then you're kind of stepping over the line. But if it's like 5 seconds of, you know, someone driving a car or someone surfing or working out in a gym, like, you're probably going to be fine.
It's funny, coming from the online space, I've always trained my team, like, we can't use other people's images and stuff.
But not music.
Yeah.
No, you can't use other people's music. But if you do, you have to use you have to pay for a license, which there's various websites you can do that with. Yeah.
Yeah, you've got to be super careful with that. That even applies to gyms, right?
Yep.
But in the surfing world, man, they just cut and paste anyone's content. They don't care at all. It's it's amazing. Yeah. The first time I saw that was like, I was on a Maldives trip and one of my guests on the boat was a surfing dad, and he uploaded a picture of the Maldives to his Instagram to tell everyone he was here. And I'm like, man, when did you get that shot? He said, oh, I just took it off the internet. Like, I don't think you can do that. Anyway, so just to recap, if someone's giving you negative comments, a few ways to think about it are that they're contributing to the content. They actually consume the content, so they're doing you a favor and adding one more number to that view count. Even if they hate it, they've given you their attention. I actually comment, I make nice comments to the people who even say vitriolic stuff. I just say, thanks so much for watching.
Yeah, there's no point arguing with them.
Yeah. They say, oh, you should have more footage of you surfing. And I say, that's a great idea, like, because I've never thought of that myself. Thanks very much. I don't say that last bit. I just think that that's a great idea. And also, like you said, it's generally only people who are not doing the stuff or creating the stuff that are happy to just spray. You see, as a creator, I would find it much harder to go and spray negativity on someone else's posts for two reasons. One is I'm more secure in myself as a human and I don't need to do that to push them down to feel better. And two is I actually understand and respect what's involved in creating. And I wouldn't want that to happen to me. But YouTube comments are quite a classic. And I do feel like we're winning if we get a positive result. And like for me, the icing on the cake was getting the manufacturer themselves saying, thank you for making this content. And that was like, wow, that's great.
Mm.
Now, something else we've done in the last few videos is we've actually used famous things or famous people to try and capture attention. So we're sort of borrowing already authoritative figures to get the attention versus putting me on the thumbnail, which never performs as well as putting someone famous. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, this is happening. This has been happening forever, and it happens with every form of media, particularly the news. And in old school times, newspapers, like what would catch your attention would be something well-known, someone famous. And we often refer to it as trendjacking or famejacking. Sounds kind of negative, but really what we're doing is just finding out what is currently popular, where is the attention flowing, and then we just go where that is, and we're tapping into an already validated source of attention and providing people with something that they want or didn't know they wanted until they saw it, which is kind of like the videos we've made, is, you know, comparing this particular product to that particular product, huge demand for it, but no one else had done it. So we've supplied a form of entertainment and education that was wanted but didn't actually exist. And this is beneficial because, like you just mentioned, you know, if I put my face on a video, that won't guarantee it or it'll do well because nobody really knows what I look like. No one knows who I am. I'm not Brad Pitt. So instead, we can look for either people or products or even just hot topics and use that as part of the core video idea, which ultimately will work better. Like, for example, you know, I've made videos on my channel that are like how to get lean, like three mistakes to get leaner, for example. Whereas if I just added three mistakes to get you lean that Jeff Bezos does, instantly, which one do you think is going to do better? Of course, Jeff Bezos' one will do better because I'm riding on the existing demand and attention and interest for Jeff Bezos. Now, it doesn't mean that every single video you make has to include some famous person or something, like, provided it's relevant to your channel, but it's very important, I guess, box on the checklist to tick off when you're at the pointy end of the process and you haven't done anything and you're thinking, what the hell video am I going to make? I don't know what to make and all that. We start with your ideation. And one of those boxes is, well, is there any trending topics, products, people, events, anything like that that right now could be relevant or trending that you can leverage just a little bit. Doesn't have to be an entire video about it. It could just be hinting it. It might even be a 15-second part of your video, but you might be able to hint at it in your thumbnail or hint at it in your title. And you could say, well, you know, here's three ways you can get lean in the next 4 months, and then I can put Jeff Bezos does this. But the video isn't about Jeff Bezos. It's about how I can get you lean, and it happens to also be that Jeff Bezos does it too. It's just like a 5-second segment of a 10-minute video. So you can get creative with this, is my point.
Yeah, well, it's been such a lesson for me because a few of the times we've talked about what the next idea is as part of your process. You got this great process. So I should just mention how this works. You have a Google Doc that you make me fill out, or we fill out together, which I don't know if that's a luxury I get, but I love that.
No, everyone, it's so important. Everyone, we have to do that.
Do you? Well, we just sit down and go through it together. It only takes probably 10 or 15 minutes. But in that process, you're killing off all the ideas that would be shit. You basically shut them down quickly. I say, what about this? And he goes, are there any videos about that? No. And the funny thing is, the topic that we've got the most success with, I mean, I'd literally sold off my stuff from that brand and wasn't planning on getting any more. But it turns out it's just a monster topic. Like, it's so big a topic that even when we made different videos, people bring it up in the comments. Even just I did one throwaway line about the topic, and then now people zoom in on that one thing. Like, it's incredible how much movement there is for that one topic. So we're just mining that topic out, and we used the famous surfer's image in the thumbnail. And now I'm actually buying more of this equipment that I was going to get away from. But it's actually, you know what, through that journey, and this is the greatest thing about the process, is I've actually fallen back in like with the stuff. I'm not going to say love, because I think there's better stuff, but it's actually not bad. I think they actually made the changes that I've picked up on because the first product wasn't that good, and they made a lot of changes, and I'm able to report that the second product is great, and a lot of people are really celebrating that. And I know I'm representing a whole bunch of people who aren't going to be able to go out there and try all this stuff themselves. They're just going to have to put their trust in me. So we found the safest path by working with where the attention was in the market. And you keep me on that. You're like, no, let's stay on the topic. What about these people who just want to go and make a video that they think would be amazing? No one's doing this. It'll be so good. How do you rein that in with a student or a client of yours?
I think it depends, right? We can make any video we want, but if we have this belief that we can just turn the camera on, and I'm not assuming everyone listening to this believes this, but there is at least one person who may. If we think we can just turn the camera on and off the cuff, hit record and just be authentic and just say, speak from the heart, that means every human on earth would be famous and have a huge YouTube channel, because everyone speaks from the heart every day to their kids, their loved ones, their mom, their dog. It's not as easy as that. We need to be respectful of the people we wish to watch our videos. I like to come at this as like, you know, if you've watched Dune 2, you probably would realize that the director or producer, whatever his name is, Dennis, I feel like he has respect for me, the viewer. He respects my time. He respects my attention. And he's putting forth the best possible film without wasting my damn time that I'm going to enjoy. Now, I'm not saying you can't be authentic and you can't speak from the heart, but don't have this expectation that you're just going to hit record and speak off the cuff and be authentic and everyone's going to love it. So make whatever videos you want, but have realistic expectations. And the reality is, there's probably 20 to 30 videos that you, James, would love to make right now, but we're deliberately not doing that because we've proven that we've got attention talking about a specific topic, and your goal is to grow this channel to hit 1,000 subs this year, which we're already on, we're almost halfway there. And to monetize the channel and build its authority. So it really depends on what your goal is. However, what other people have done, and this is even something I've considered doing, that if I want to talk about content that is different, that is what I want to talk about, just make a new channel and just post fresh videos, whatever it is that you want to talk about, on a different channel and keep it separate. like I have my channel under my name, Zach Mason, right? And I've tested a bunch of different topics and I've already made these mistakes and I kind of regret doing it because I've made videos that attracted an audience who are never going to buy from me and has got me like 500 subscribers who never come back and watch my next videos. So now when I make topics that are beneficial to my business that do warm up my audience, that my followers and prospects watch before they work with me, now I'm getting less people watching them and it's going to take me longer to build that up. However, even in just three videos, I'm getting more end screen click-throughs. So just like we've done with your channel, with the core topic and product theme thread. So I'm talking about getting lean this way, avoiding this mistake of being lean, the shortcut to being lean. I keep this thread going and now what's happening is people are watching through to the video and at the end I say, but this isn't everything. This is tip of the iceberg. You actually need to know A, B, and C, which I talk about right here. And the video ends. So it's like you're watching a Netflix episode and then old mate standing at the edge of a cliff and just goes boom and the credits come and you're like, ah, I want to watch the next episode. And then they go and watch this one and then they go and watch the next one. And then YouTube goes, oh, this guy's content must be good because this, you know, person ABC keeps watching and then they watch the next one. Not. So you want to create like your own little like Netflix channel that stays true to a core topic. But if you want to go off track and you want to talk about anything else, just start a new channel and it might blow up or it might tank and you might change your mind, but try not to pee in the pool. Keep it nice and clean in there. Don't make it murky. You know, just keep the content consistent so you get reliable data, which is what we've done and it's working really well for your channel.
It's definitely why I had a surf channel because most of my business people aren't going to be interested in the stuff that I'm posting there.
Oh, that would be a disaster. Yeah.
And I did see a channel yesterday I was reviewing for someone and they had technical website stuff. They had videos of them in the gym. They talked about TRT replacement. They had Brazilian jiu-jitsu matches. They had some more business interviews. I'm like, very hard for me to grasp what this thing's about. It's like a lot of everything, but it's also really nothing.
Yeah, I've got an example for that, like Alex Hormozy. So he can pretty much talk about anything. He can talk about how many times he goes to the bathroom and takes a dump and he'll probably get 200,000 views just on that topic, right? Why? Because he blew up talking about a consistent topic, which initially was opening and scaling gyms. So he blew up in a micro niche and then that made him famous, which brought in more people. And then he built products to serve a bigger audience, which made him even more famous. And now he can play hopscotch across different topics. And now I will watch a video of his that talks about
protein,
his biggest, yeah, like a protein. Like, well, what is Alex actually eating? Even though I don't really care, but I'll still watch it because he made the video. But if he came out and nobody knew about him and he's like, I eat a pound of turkey mince every day, I'd be like, cool, good for you, bro. But because he's famous, now I give a shit.
Yep.
So my point is we shouldn't look at Hormozy or Casey Neistat or...
Well, that other guy who's making those long gym videos with no scripting that everyone follows.
Sam Sulek. Yeah. Like, is everyone now doing this? And it's like, well, hang on. Are you like practically drinking steroids for breakfast? No. So just being authentic in the gym doesn't mean you're going to blow up like Sam Sulek. You might, but you're going to have to do something outrageous like that Anatoly guy who dresses up as a janitor and then lifts more weight than the bodybuilders. But it's a unique angle.
And to that point, Anatoly makes the same video over and over and over and over and over and over and over.
Exactly.
Again. Exactly like that the rock climber who goes undercover and pretends to be a beginner and what's his name? Magnus? Like does the hardest climb in the whole gym and it blows them all away. That's a never-endingly interesting topic. And eventually they just can't do it because their cover's blown and they couldn't go into a gym and not be recognized. That will probably be the end game for them. But
yeah,
I noticed Anatoly's selling his own supplements and health-related products. So it's very clever because he created his own audience. And in the same way, I think I would be very close to being able to create my own product range to sell my own audience once I have enough subscribers. To your point about cultivating an audience of people who will buy. I'm not doing reaction videos for extreme wipeouts or something because that would just be a noisy audience. They have no buying intent.
You're just going to get broke guys who are bored who just want to laugh at people wiping out and
exactly,
you know, probably stoned or drinking while watching it. You know, it's just
iPhone in the bed, 10 o'clock at night sort of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So what you've really indicated in, and I've often drawn this parallel, the reason I think you're good at this is because of your fitness background, but it's basically the result that you're looking at is all the planning and preparation that went into it. I want to talk about the process when you're working with someone, and I don't know if I'm typical or different to the type of people that you do work with. You punch through that research outline, which eliminates all the shitty ideas at the beginning, but then you end up with a script, and then comes the time to record the script. And I got asked in one of my member calls at jamesschramko.com, the membership, we do a monthly AMA for our Connect level members. And someone said, what's your video process? Like, who films them and scripts them all that? And I said, well, Zach helps me research and prepare. We end up with bullet points or a script, especially for the beginning, because it's so critical.
Mm.
And then I print it off. And then I walk around my garage with, setting up equipment, and make sure I've got at least basic lighting and good sound. And my wife actually films the video, and then we put the files into a folder, and then I number them one through to whatever, and then I give it to my team to edit, and then you get involved in checking the draft and making some changes. And you made some significant changes to the most recent edit that we did, especially the beginning. Can you just talk me through what was going on when you looked at the draft, and then what you ended up changing it to? What was guiding that process? Because these are the bits I don't know how to do.
So when I watched that first draft, the first thing I realized is that I think, that particular video, we didn't actually script out the beginning. For some reason, I can't remember what. I think you were busy or I was busy.
The reason was my wife was going overseas. So
that's why
I made a film that
we skipped a step
just before she went, and then you came over and we scripted the rest of it.
Right.
So it's a classic validation of your scripting method. Where it didn't happen, it's easy to get it wrong.
Yeah, and it's not that I would say it was wrong, it just wasn't optimal. So when I was watching the first draft, the first thing I'm thinking is, when do I start to feel annoyed, or I want to click away, or bored, confused, anything that causes me discomfort, pain that I don't want to feel, I look for, and then I figure, how can we cut this out? Get rid of it. Just kill it off. And Stephen King, one of the best writers in the world, he has a famous quote. It says, kill your darlings. So you might have this amazing idea, and I have to do this with my own videos all the time, and it hurts to do, but it's, you're respecting the viewer by not trying to push them through pain and watching your video. You want it to be a grease slide from the start. So I get rid of all the pain and all the discomfort and frustration of whatever's in the video. Then I look for what's most interesting. And typically, people don't like it if we beat around the bush too much. We can be teased a little bit and a little bit of cliffhangers, but if you're watching a Netflix show and every 2 minutes there was a cliffhanger, your adrenaline would be off the charts. You'd be ready to take a nap within 20 minutes. You'd be over it. You wouldn't want to watch it anymore. So my point is, then I look for the parts that really are like sticky. You think like, oh, I want to know the answer to that. And I try to put them first. So if the video starts, in no way is there any, hey, I'm Zach, welcome back, da, 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 blah, 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 the sky's blue, the grass is green, hit subscribe. And it's been like 2 minutes before, to stop all that and get straight into the action. Like if you walked into a movie and you're sitting down and the lights go off and the intro starts and then all the actors sit down and start talking about who they are, you're like, what the hell is this? So you just want to get straight into the action. So we want to do the same with the YouTube video. And that's what I was doing with yours. So I just culled all the bits that I think would have lost attention or tuned people out or got them confused. And I took all the best parts in that first minute and put it up the front. And essentially what I was doing, or what we did with the intro, was took it from a kind of long drawn out intro that was, you know, logical and made sense. And we shortened it to a more exciting, interesting and intriguing intro that got people hooked. So instead of saying like, you know, this is just off the cuff, but you know, I've bought this product and I think it's really good, but other people are saying it's really bad and I'm going to review it and then we can do a comparison. We can just cut straight to, people love this product, but I don't. And then boom, cut to something else. So this particular person made this product back then and it's most popular, but there's a few flaws with it. We don't tell them what the flaws are straight away, and then we cut to the next part. So then I took this product out myself, put it to the test, tried it in this board, which is also popular, tried it in that board, which is also popular. So we're creating this like stack of like curiosity and interest before we dive into the meat of the video. And that was what we did with this video. But all that is actually really easy to do in the script.
Yeah.
And this is where people I don't want to say screw up, but where they let themselves down and they're missing out on better video performance is not giving the pre-planning and the script the attention that it deserves.
Well, I love it when I've got that script and I just put it down, I read the next line, and then I set up the shot and then film. And then it doesn't take long to make the video when you have the script. It's way quicker to make it. It's way quicker for the edit to come back.
Yep.
Like, he's literally getting a box with him in number, and I actually film it in order, which is something Casey Neistat does. He generally films in chronological order. I try and do that where I can, except for the B-rolls, which obviously I have to go and slot in because I'm doing action shots that relate to what I'm talking about. That's another thing I noticed in the other one. It was me talking and then the action shot. You splice the action shots while I'm talking.
Yeah.
And that made a huge, huge difference.
Well, you said, let's go out and take this for a test. And I thought, well, why don't we just show you testing it while you're saying it instead of
it was way better.
Making him wait and wait and wait. And it's like, no, just show the action up front. And that's the thing, like, use B-roll. You don't have to be you talking to the camera all the time, but you can do this in the script. Like, you can script it out and then put a highlight, B-roll, 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 B-roll.
That's exactly what we do when we're planning it. I mean, it's obvious to me which parts I'm going to have to demonstrate.
Yeah.
And then I actually number the B-roll as, like, if it's shot 7, then I put the B-roll as 7B so that it slots in before 8. And having the team edit is great because I'm not a great editor, and having you review it is good. Where you've been so valuable is making sure we're only filming the right thing to start with. I can't emphasize that enough. The second thing is keeping the project driven. Like, what's the next video? Where are we up to? When's it being published? You also review the thumbnails, which are, of course, critical. We have changed our process since the last time we spoke. We found that, again, we were able to get really close to the mark based on our learnings of the previous thumbnails. And when it's going really well out of the gate, like a 9 or 10% click-through, we don't touch it with a test just yet. So how did that change?
Just through experimenting. So, you know, we tested, and I tested my own videos of, like, doing split testing early, which, look, that can work for massive channels. Like, if people are getting 100,000 impressions very fast, that's so many impressions that you can pretty quickly find out what thumbnail or title will work better. But as impressions expand, what YouTube is actually doing is showing your video to a wider audience, wider audience, wider audience. And that means it's going to be a little bit of a different audience every time it expands. So if you keep changing things up, it almost, like, distorts the data. So you're split testing, but you're not getting this accurate kind of data feedback. So if a thumbnail or a video is doing well from the beginning, it's best just to leave it alone until things kind of slow down. Then you can make a judgment call of, well, how much did it slow down? Is it worth testing now? If I am going to test it now, what should I change it to? And that's something that, you know, we look at as well. But you can see, like, YouTube has its, like, little kind of growth spurts. Like, you post it and then nothing might not happen for 24 hours. And then boom, you get 10,000 impressions within, like, 5 hours. And then it flatlines again. You're like, what happened? Well, it's just, it showed it to an audience, got feedback and data. You got a bunch of views, and then maybe that audience have gone to sleep. And now it's saying, okay, well, let's just see if they come back tomorrow, the same time, and the same audience views it, or people in that audience, or they might switch it up and show it to a different audience. So typically, the more views you get, the more impressions you get, the more the click-through rate will decline, because it's showing a broader audience. And the broader it goes, the less, I mean, relatively, there's going to be less people interested because it's a broader audience, if that makes sense.
And if it's a dog, when you publish it, it's time to take drastic action, right? Change out that thumbnail.
Maybe. Like, I've had videos that have done nothing for a whole week, and I've been, like, wanting to cry about it, and then out of nowhere, it takes off, gets like 1,000 views. So sometimes you just have to be patient and let YouTube find the audience. Particularly if you're a brand new channel, you've posted no videos at all, and you're in a very competitive, saturated niche, you just have to let YouTube find the audience. And, you know, I've seen people who've posted videos and, like, 6 months later, they'll get tens of thousands of views, but up until then, nothing happened. And that just could be a change in the algorithm, could be a change in a trend, like, maybe all of a sudden something became popular and the video was there ready for it. So if we just treat every video as, like, part of your portfolio and it's contributing to the whole theme of the purpose of your channel, some videos are going to do really well and do a lot of heavy lifting. Other ones are just going to be there as like for the people who just want to know about it. And that's okay. Like not every video has to be a 1 of 10 absolute all-time hit, because you might have a small little portion of your audience who really want to know about a particular topic, and that video can fill that need, but you're not going to get a million views on it. However, you can make a video that's, you know, about, I don't know, someone famous, like, you know, World War III or whatever's trending right now, the Bondi, you know, guy who went around Westfield and did bad things. That video could blow up, but that's because there's a lot of interest there right now. But if you made that video in 6 months from now, no one's going to care.
Well, the video that should be made for that is how to defend against a knife attack.
Yeah, anyone who's got, yeah, like videos right now in self-defense, you know, like how to blow up right now.
Those ones are spiking right this moment. And I only say that not because I'm an opportunist, but because it's good content to publish to help people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the sort of thing that I would personally search for.
Sounds a bit dark, but...
But it's also, you know, it's just you get these signals, hey, maybe you should just brush up on what to do in this situation, because it apparently can happen. So let's just finish out on the workflow part.
Sure.
So I think that's one of the most interesting things for me.
Yep.
When you were training me with the fitness stuff, you gave me some principles that made it easy for me. Like, I don't care so much what you eat, as long as you, you know, try and go for protein somewhere in there, but just make sure you don't go way over this ceiling limit. You know, on an average daily amount. If you go over one day, just pull back a bit the next, right? That's been a guideline that's helped me. The thing that I like the most about the video is just working on one video at a time and keeping it simple. One video at a time, and then it's broken down into steps. It's come up with the ideation and the script, get the thumbnail drafted, record the stuff, edit it, check it all, publish it, tune it. This process, I like that it's not one video a day or one video a week or some stupid published by 5 p.m. Thursday or whatever. I think that pressure would create substandard results. The one video at a time philosophy is brilliant because I'm not able to get overloaded on that. I'm only thinking about the next video, just what's the next video and where are we up to in filming it. It's just so easy to be accountable to that. Have you seen people go overboard in terms of production levels or over creating?
I mean, I've fallen victim to this myself as well, where you feel like you need to jam a lot into a video or get really fancy with editing or
all the equipment. The classic.
Yeah,
we film all my YouTube videos with just this one, whatever's in this bag, and a GoPro. That's it. This is my entire film set, which is crazy because I have got so much equipment here, it's ridiculous, right? But that was one block that people would have. Do I need all this fancy tech? No. You just need a good script with the right concept and some basic equipment and some reasonable setups with your framing and sound and lighting. But, you know, I imagine people could probably want to hire pros or get other people involved. Do they make something that could be easy harder than it should be?
Yeah, it's very easy to do that. It's so, so easy to think, oh, I need to get a $2,000 camera and I need $1,000 lights and, you know, $500 microphone. And look at since the last episode, I've installed this wall and that was $1,000. So like I'm doing this too, but for a different purpose. So I'm trying to make high quality videos so that I know if the video doesn't work well, it was on me and my content, not because the lighting or audio was bad. However, at absolute minimum, all you need is a phone or an iPhone, a $50 or $100 microphone that you can plug in, preferably a $20 little tripod. So for less than a couple hundred bucks, you've got more than enough and you can use natural lighting near a window to make you nice and bright. And if the script is really good, the video can do well, provided that, you know, what you're saying is good content and people want to listen. And a lot of videos have blown up because the content was so good that everyone forgot about the blurry screen and maybe it was a bit echoey or, you know, the phone rattled a little bit.
Well, like that lobster one, the lobster in the aquarium. You know, the guy saves the lobster from a restaurant and takes it home. Leon, the lobster.
I don't think I've seen that.
Oh, man. He basically just finds a lobster in a tank at the restaurant and decides to save it and takes it home and films it and it just blows up. And then he makes sequels.
Okay. Yeah.
That's just a great idea. And it doesn't need to be fancy filming. So I guess what I'm saying is the simple approach has worked well for me. I'm not doing anything super tricky.
Mm.
And if I didn't even have the equipment or whatever, I'm sure I could borrow it or go to a demo day or befriend a surf shop or something. Like, there's ways around having to overcome those barriers. I know one of the guys in my surfing niche, he waits till the demo van arrives and then surfs the boards and films them all. And then that's his content, right? So he's not paying for anything.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, your type of content is extremely difficult. You have to get the products. You have to learn about the products. You have to take them out into the wild and actually use the damn products. Oh, man, like, already I'm like, this is a lot. Whereas most people, like me, sitting at my desk right in front of the damn screen where I've written the script, yeah, turn the camera on, read off the damn script, turn it off, send it to the editor. It's like,
that's a dream.
ABC.
We'd be like making this podcast where we're just chatting, right? That's why I've been able to do it for so long, right? 15 years, because it's not that hard to turn on a recorder and capture something. But compared to the content that I've chosen, I suppose that barrier to entry is what means it's a little bit harder, but also a little bit less people doing it.
Mm.
But let's be real, it's kind of hard to make great YouTube videos. It's not super easy. Otherwise,
no,
everyone would have amazing knock it out of the park videos. I imagine most people are in the same situation that I was, where the things you've published before are just either not that good or not getting much of a reaction. That was me for a very long time. I'm absolutely stoked when I look at the source for these videos, where the traffic's coming from. It's YouTube promoting it on their own homepage. That's what I'm after. I've only got a handful of subscribers, but the video is being showed to so many more people. And we have added 400 subscribers since we were talking last. I mean, that's not to be sneezed at. That's 400 humans who have said, yes, I'd like to get more information from this channel. So a big thank you, Zach. And how could someone else work with you if they want to get you involved in helping them choose the idea, come up with a script, and help them get their first video cranking?
So easiest way is just to reach out. Send me an email. Well, go to vidsurface.com and you can grab my email there. Shoot me an email. Let me know what your channel is, what your ideas are, and we can have a chat. I only work one-on-one. I don't sell courses and I do not have a YouTube channel that teaches people how to make YouTube channels. I deliberately chose not to do that. And I use my fitness channel as my experimental science lab of YouTube. So when I'm teaching something, I've either tested it myself or clients have done it.
Tested it through me.
Yeah, or we have proof of concept already. Yeah, I'm not doing the whole incestuous, you know, YouTubers thing. But yeah, just hit me up in an email and happy to chat, see if I can help. And if that's the case, then you'll be working with me one-on-one on one video at a time, one step at a time. And we front load all the effort up front. You know, good idea leads to a good thumbnail, which leads to a good title, which leads to a great script. And the better your script is, the easier filming is. All you have to do is just read one line at a time and your editor just goes, delete all silences, and the whole video collapses into this like smooth timeline and no one even knows that you were reading off a script. It's like magic.
Love it.
And it feels weird at first, but once you've done it twice, you just get over it and you're like, oh yeah, this is so much better than turning on the camera and trying to freeball it and off the cuff it. It's just nuts. So anyway, I don't want to blab on about that, but vidsurface.com.
Thank you, Zach. We'll put the links up in the show notes, which is episode 1070 on jamesschramko.com. Really, really happy with how this is going and the help that you've given me and the results we got. And congrats to us on the 10,000 view video off a tiny little subscriber base. The proof is in the pudding. And I hope to bring you back. We'll probably get some questions from this. If you do have a question for Zach, click me an email, just reply to the email that we send out about this episode, or send me an email, james@jamesschramko.com, and ask me the question and we'll get Zach back to talk about it. And we'll give you an update on where we're going with the channel. I'm not stopped yet. I'm just getting started.
Next milestone, 1,000 subs.
Yeah.
This is James Schramko.